Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight, podcast number 229, recording this on Wednesday, the 5th of December, 2012, about 2 weeks since our last podcast, so let's get into it. With me, I have Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
And David Gilson.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Riff. And hello, everybody else.
What I'd like to do, guys, rather than launch into some heavyweight discussion topic as we did last time and rather got sidetracked, but it was all good debate, we have a bunch of little stories and updates. I'd like to rattle through them and basically get your feedback. If you don't want a feedback, you can just say no comment. I want a very short podcast, but hopefully there'll be a few comments along the way. Story number one, imaging innovator Damien Dinning to leave Nokia. I guess he's actually left now and joined, is it a Jaguar Land Rover, Rafe? And I guess that's it's good that he hasn't gone to a competitor of Nokia's. How big a story is this and how big an impact will it have on Nokia, do you think?
Well, I mean, you can talk about it in several ways. And yes, you're right, he's gone to Jaguar Land Rover. He's going to work on connected cars. Interesting space, because I think there's a lot of potential there. And just as he's done kind of in the imaging space for Nokia, I think he could well have a big effect. His work has been about kind of almost a vision process, talking about where the company should go next. And it's worth pointing out that Damien has a very high profile in public, and quite rightly so, because he's a good presenter and he's good at explaining some of the technology, and has done so to me many times over the years. So, you know, he's made me far more intelligent sounding about imaging than I ever was before. But there is a big team behind him. And so that kind of comes around to your second question, you know, how big an impact does this have? Well, of course, when you lose a leader in a company, in a department, or someone who's been responsible for a lot of the work and maybe dictating the direction that you're moving in, it has an impact. But I think it's also fair to say, you know, he's built up with a number of colleagues, and it's probably worth saying he's not, you know, the leader of the imaging division, though kind of Nokia tends to have multiple leaders in any department, and actually, you know, the hierarchy isn't necessarily one that you'd assume. And there's a couple of others who are still working for Nokia and who were around for many years and have been so, actually. I'm trying to remember their Finnish names, but it's escaping me for a moment. But let's just say there's, and of course, there's a whole team behind implementing all of these ideas, and at, you know, partner companies as well. And so I think in the short term, the impact will really be about the perception. You know, Nokia's lost someone who was an imaging innovator, and that won't be a good thing. You know, it will just add to the story of, you know, Nokia having a tough year, or should we say a tough couple of years even. But in the longer term, it's hard to tell what kind of impact this has. You know, I think actually he's done a lot of the work that was the most remarkable in terms of introducing the idea of things like PureView, which, although it's a branding name, it's also an idea within the company that you think about the kind of the imaging beyond just the hardware. You think about the software implications, think about how you can, you know, create the next generation of these camera devices. And, you know, previously it's been very much restricted, if you like, to hardware, and PureView was about both hardware innovations, and we see that with the massive sensor in something like the 808, but also with the optical image stabilization in the 920. But it's also about the software optimization, what you can do with algorithms there. And actually, I think we're only just getting going on that. The hardware bit was kind of the big showy thing initially. I think a lot of the next stage of development will come more in software, partly because the new hardware introduces so much more capability. And I know that's something that Damien was pushing internally. And you can see it in some of the initial things like Cinemagraph, which, although it kind of has a quite a funky thing, and this is something I should say, it's on the Windows Phone devices, it's not on the Symbian devices, but it's worth mentioning. It does something, it basically looks at the different frames in a photograph and looks at their alignment and can calculate things about them, and you can then do smart processing on the photos. I think that's where we'll see a lot more activity in the future, as well as other software areas. You know, it's kind of a very broad topic to talk about. But at the same time, obviously, you know, Damien's been really important to Nokia's imaging team. And I also think you can't underestimate the importance of having someone who can explain some of these complex ideas, you know, succinctly and clearly. So he will be very much missed from Nokia, I'm sure.
Yeah, just looking back over the history of the smartphone over the last, I guess, 8 or 9 years, from the very first camera phone, the Nokia 7650, I believe. And then a couple of years after that, we suddenly saw something like the N90, the very first sort of transformer smartphone with the specialist camera barrel. And I think Damien may have been involved in that early stage, and certainly the N93 that followed it, the N82, the N95, that range. Yes, he's, if nothing else, he's put a kick up the backside of the entire smartphone industry to say, hey, cameras are important. Cameras are going to be a leading hardware component and devices going forwards. Let's make sure we've got the best ones that money can buy.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. I mean, certainly Nokia has been pushing imaging in smartphones for a long time. You start with the 7615, as you say, all those products that Damon was involved with. I've been very fortunate to meet him on a number of occasions, and as I said, he's largely responsible for a lot of the education I've had about smartphone imaging, and you know, some of the things I then talk about, you know, I mean, effectively rephrasing, probably not entirely accurately, some of the things that he said. And that's why, as I say, it's important from the way Nokia publicly presents these imaging enhancements and innovations. It is important because, you know, that's the perception that then comes out about them. But also, you know, there's been a lot of kind of technical feedback. Damien's been active on Twitter and getting involved in sites like dpreview.com and talking, you know, in a lot of detail about, you know, how Nokia approaches the subject in terms of doing all the processing, getting some of the results, you know, some of the decisions that are made, because inherently, of course, in a smartphone, there are compromise, and there's true of the imaging side as well. And I think having someone active and that has, you know, done a lot of good. And, you know, I think we can all think back fondly over some of the products that Steve was talking about there and say, thank you very much to Damien, and we wish him all the best in his new endeavours. But as I say, you know, there are other people involved, so I don't think there should be too much doom and gloom here. I mean, the reason this happened really was because of Nokia cutting back costs. One of the things it's done is closed a number of offices, including its Farnborough office in the UK, and the imaging teams have kind of been centralised in Finland. I think it's at Tampere, and as a result, you know, Damien wasn't able to move at this stage. So that's fine. Has gone on to new adventures, but there are other people still there, you know, people like Jua Alakaru, I'm probably massacring the name, so apologies if anyone's listening, and Eero Samelin. There's also Ari Partanen, and more recently Christina Bulknats. Those are all kind of leaders or people who have been active, I think, in the public from the imaging team, but there's a large number of engineers behind them, and of course, you know, through partners at places like Carl Zeiss being the obvious one, but also a lot of the sensor manufacturers for bit the EDOF cameras or some of the more recent ones, where Nokia have never quite talked about where all of those companies, but we think that some of them are things like Sanyo and Samsung have all contributed, of course, to creating these cameras. And there's an increasing number of people working on the algorithm side. You know, Scalado, for example, recently acquired by Nokia, they're now integrated into that team, and a lot of the kind of the software processing is coming from there. So yes, just to kind of emphasize, I think his two big achievements are, you know, being a very high profile public face of Nokia's imaging achievements. And I know he's somewhat I think it's probably fair to say Damien's very humble, but he's somewhat embarrassed by the amount of attention he gets. But I think it's well deserved, because he did get out there and has been very active in the community. But also in terms of that vision of where to take Nokia's imaging next, that PureView brand and all of that implies in terms of both hardware and software. So, you know, it's well worth, you know, giving him a round of applause, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, just a couple of anecdotal bits. One is that I think he actually got first involved with Nokia on the imaging side back in the day of the N93, because I remember quizzing him face-to-face saying, what happened with the N93i then, the way the stereo microphones have moved upwards and the screen tech was changed, blah, blah, blah. And he gave me the reason that, yes, actually, that, sorry, Steve, that was actually all my fault. It was my specific direction that I was trying to reduce the noise from the optical zoom mechanism making its way out of the soundtrack, which I guess is a good example, Rafe, of the sort of compromise you were talking about just then. But also wanted to just say that I'll forgive him for that, because of course Damien was the guy who introduced and damn near enforced Xenon making its way into the top end Nokia camera smartphones. And everyone knows I'm a big Xenon flash fan. It really makes a difference for indoor photographs, and Damien was the guy who pushed that forward. So thank you for that, Damien, from a very personal level.
Yes, and also, you know, talking those kind of personal anecdotes, one of the things that, you know, came on very strongly in the more recent devices is kind of a wider spread for the testing of photos. And it wasn't just Damien that was responsible. There were actually a couple on the team. But previously, it was fair to say that some scenarios got missed out. And people always wondered why, you know, photographs taken in snow look so good. And well, that was a lot to do with the fact that some of the testing team, of course, was based in Finland. They're now on a much wider variety of devices. But it does go to show with these devices how important testing is. And I know that's one thing that was supposed to, you know, basically comparing images side by side, making small tweaks. I mean, what people might not know is in terms of some of the drivers and the bits in these cameras, there's quite literally hundreds of settings that can be adjusted. And if you then start adding in the software algorithms, well, it gets even more complex. And so, you know, getting that kind of process right, it's a real science. It's not something that's very easy to replicate. And this is, in one sense, where Nokia has a big advantage. It's kind of the barrier to entry here is not just as simple as slapping a few components together and putting them in the phone. And I think that's only going to get more true. And you see this kind of importance of these software algorithms and these settings in all devices quite often early on. And there's a few glitches in specific usage scenarios, or the processing is turned up too much or something else, which is why quite often these devices will improve in terms of camera performance in later firmware updates.
Yeah, when the Apple iPhone was first launched, Steve Jobs famously came on stage and said he thought that the Apple had a five-year lead over the rest of the field. And I think he was obviously talking about interface and software, and I would dispute the five-year figure, but I would argue that they did push the idea of an all-touch interface forward, which is fair enough. I argued at the time that Nokia had several years lead in terms of hardware design over the rest of the field, including Apple, and certainly camera technology was part of that. But Let's move on to another story with a Slinky Link using hardware. The Nokia 808, mine's been fairly fine, Rafe. I've only had a couple of sort of random screen blanks where I had to take the battery out, but there has been a specific official acknowledgement now that under certain conditions, and I'll just read out the appropriate point from the Nokia support page here, please send your phone to a Nokia care point for inspection if it has the following symptoms when using 3G HSPA, high-speed packet access, data connectivity. And the symptoms are: the phone screen turns black, but the physical keys under the screen remain lit, and the only way to recover from the condition is to remove the battery. This does seem to be an electronic fault to do with switching the HSPA modes backwards and forwards, and it happens typically on an area of a sort of fairly low 3G signal when it's having to dial back its modes. There is a workaround you can do in the meantime, and if you can't get to a Nokia care point, and that's to go into settings, connectivity, admin settings, mobile data, remembering this, high-speed packet access, and then disable it. Basically, you still get 3G data, but not the HSPA component. And but ultimately, if you are afflicted by this, and that will obviously depend on perhaps your particular hardware build, and also exactly where you are, in which country, and what your 3G connectivity is like anyway, what sort of signal you're getting, if you are afflicted by this, you can go to a Nokia care point. It's a known fault, and they will basically replace a specific capacitor on the motherboard, and you'll be good to go, and you can re-enable HSPA. So a rather unfortunate hardware glitch here, Rafe, but it's certainly fairly easy to work around, and certainly I've only seen it once, I think, in 6 months. What about you?
Yeah, I can't say I can recall ever having had this happen to me. I mean, that's probably in part because a lot of the places I'm using it don't have 3G connectivity, let alone HSDPA. But yes, it's an interesting one. I guess it's a reflection of the fact that we haven't seen millions and millions of 808 sold, so it's taken a while for this problem to be identified, and it obviously occurs in a specific set of circumstances, but it is a pretty frustrating one, because it's, I wouldn't say it's an uncommon scenario to be in that kind of low data thing and switching between back and forth. I don't know whether it affects it every single time, but as you say, the easiest way is to do that software setting. I personally will find that very irritating because I want to use the maximum speed data. But yes, otherwise, I'm afraid you'll have to go off to a Nokia service centre. If it's affecting you, I guess I should say. I mean, if it's not affecting you, fine, you can probably ignore it.
Let's go on with another story. Nokia Public Transport has got a big update. Now, David hasn't done much talking so far. I'm hoping he'll take the bulk of this one. It's good to see the Symbian version. It's not quite marching in step with the Windows Phone version, but it's good to see this update. Reading's still not covered yet, though, so I still can't cover the public transport in my area in Berkshire. What about you up in Hull, David?
No, I'm afraid no. Look, that's why I made a beeline to install this update. I was just seeing if my area would be covered, but unfortunately it was not. Although when I looked through the cities that it does cover, I noticed it did cover quite a few new UK cities, which is a good step forward. For version 2.5, which is this update, as mentioned, there is more coverage. And he also says there's improved station search, which as you type in the station name you want, it will prioritize search results by their distance from you. And there are going to be continuous and automatic over-the-air updates, so there's no more long installs as we've had with this version. They're also going to improve it for first-time usage. And
yeah, Ray, while David's paused there, how much longer can we expect Nokia's core public transport and maps suite software to keep advancing for Symbian? It does seem like there's still some people working on the OS over there.
Well, that's a good question, Steve. I don't have any particular insight here. You know, I haven't been told anything. I think one of the important things in this particular public transport update is that it includes the ability to update coverage over the air. You know, previously, they had to update the version every time they wanted to add new cities or new transport types. This will now happen in the background, and so your city may, you know, start being covered in a few months' time. That's all tied into kind of the Nokia location database in the background, which of course it shares with, you know, Series 40 Windows Phone and indeed other platforms, thanks to kind of new the HERE stuff that Nokia introduced and we talked about in the last podcast. And so in that sense, it will keep on getting updates and coverage will improve. In terms of the app itself, I suspect this is kind of one of the last updates for transport. You know, actually, there's some quite nice stuff here. It brings it in line with transport kind of on other platforms. I think my favorite thing is being able to see this kind of dual display, you know, with a map and then the details of the route to take. It's much clearer than just having, you know, this pictogram version of the route, at least in my opinion. For the other apps, you know, we've already seen City Lens essentially go away for Symbian, although, as we've said, there's workarounds for that. Maps, similarly, I don't really expect to see big updates there. It'll be more about maintenance and possibly, you know, updates to, if there's changes to the underlying databases in terms of the map or the place database. But, you know, you can expect them to, you know, they'll keep working. You know, Nokia's kind of said support for Symbian devices continue through to 2016. So we're talking, you know, 3 or 4 years. So at the very least, you know, they'll all keep working, because it's important to remember all of these apps have a kind of a large server-side component. It's not just what's on your device. But in terms of big updates, you know, I wouldn't expect too much. I was kind of pleasantly surprised by this public transport one. But you're right, you know, there will still be people working on this, you know, either fixing bugs or, you know, doing stuff on the server side. So, you know, they're not dying off by any means. Yeah. And as we've said before, actually, the versions on Symbian are far more mature in some ways than they are on other platforms. And so there's less of a need for updates. Of course, there will be functions introduced. And I think City Lens is kind of a good example of this, where to a certain extent, the technology was getting away from, you know, the hardware requirements and the capability. It's not so true of the recent Symbian devices, which, you know, do have that extra boost, but the older ones certainly. And something like, you know, City Lens, it's the sensors it requires and also kind of the processing power to do that, especially some of the things they're now introducing. You know, for example, they're, you know, actually looking at what's in the camera viewfinder and taking stuff away if you can't see it. That's in the latest version. It's beta at the moment for Windows Phone. But to do that on Symbian might be a bit beyond the processing capabilities. Well, maybe not so much that, as, you know, the work required to implement that would probably be prohibitive. So I guess that's a long way of saying I don't really expect that many more updates, but everything will continue working just fine.
I in the changelog, but I mean, they do say they've made it so that they can slipstream in new features. And I think the thing that I would really hope for, and which it seems quite reasonable expectation to me, is that rather than new features, is that as they get new data for transport in new areas, that will be going into the Windows Phone version of Nokia Transport, and hopefully that data will trickle through into the Symbian side as well.
I can confirm that absolutely will happen. That's kind of the key thing in this update. It's been happening for a while now on some of the other platforms, but this applies to Symbian as well. And so, you know, what's happening, essentially, there's a big database in the background, and all the time Nokia is doing deals with transport companies or maybe city authorities, depending on the situation. And that's to get information. And there's kind of two levels to this. The first one is just simple routing i.e. knowing where there's kind of trains that you can take from one place to another. Kind of the second layer of that is timetables, and in some places there's also a third layer, which is actually live kind of information, so it will know if trains are running late, and that's all incorporated in, and that happens on the server side, and that can then be fed down to the devices. But what's essentially happening is the devices will ask every now and then, it might be once a week, you know, are there extra cities that are now covered? And the server will go, yes, they are, here they are. And that will then be integrated into the, you know, the app automatically. As I said previously, that was only really workable through doing an actual app update. And so in that sense, there's a continuous stream of updates, as David describes.
Yeah, just opening up public transport on my Nokia at the moment, guys. It actually checks whether your area is covered at the point of startup. So rather than have to worry, has it been updated, hasn't it been updated, and then keeps searching for something, you can literally just start the application up. And in my case, it says, we're sorry, we don't have info for Reading just now, but we're adding new cities every day. And then you've got the options to continue or to browse the list of covered regions. So basically just start it up every couple of weeks, I guess, and then hopefully your city, if it's big enough, will be covered.
Well, the other thing I like in this update is that, you know, you can now more easily kind of plan a journey in the future and, you know, somewhere where you're not. So that's quite useful if you're planning ahead. You know, you want to get from the airport to into the middle of a city or a hotel or something at a specific time. It is particularly handy if you're checking kind of what time do I need to leave a venue to catch the last train. I've used that a couple of times. And so I'd say, you know, actually this update is, you know, adds some useful features, but also it's kind of a usability thing. It makes it more useful when you're actually using it out in the real world.
Yeah. Moving on with our list of stories, and I want to keep this one fairly brief, Ray, because we have covered it before and when it was postulated, but Nokia's headquarters at Espoo, they basically sold it and then leasing it back, which seems to me horrifically inefficient, but apparently they're due to bag some money out of it. Is it worth them doing it? 170 million euros, Rafe?
It depends who you ask, obviously, but essentially this is part of the Nokia strategy of giving up their non-core activities, and obviously managing an office and real estate is not something that's core to what Nokia does day in, day out. And it's the, you know, in the business world, this is, I guess you could call it outsourcing, and that's obviously been a big trend of recent years. And yes, it does save money. I know Steve's a bit of a cynic and skeptical about these sort of things, but sometimes these newfangled things do make sense. and in this particular sense, there's actually kind of two benefits. There's the capital injection that Nokia gets, 170 million euros. You could say, if you're a cynic, say that won't go very far given some of the losses that Nokia have made recently. But I actually think the more important one is you don't have to keep people on staff who are responsible for maintaining the office building and all of that involves. And obviously, it, you know, when you're talking about a building that's thousands of people working, it's not a small scale thing. And so Nokia also gets a predictability. You know, it's paying a certain amount of rent per month and maintenance fees as well. But it doesn't then have to pay one-off charges when, I don't know, the roof collapses or something. That's maybe a bit dramatic. But there's kind of, you know, rather than in 10 years' time having to re-roof something or redo the cladding on something, that will all be included within the service fee. So if you add it up over many years, it probably is more expensive. But you could say that 170 million euros could be invested and then the interest from that could pay for the rent and therefore you getting it for free forever. But of course it doesn't quite work like that. I mean, in financial terms, it's really about having a predictable amount going out each month on rent. And actually this happens in a number of other Nokia offices. You know, they don't own all their sites by any means. Kind of, it's high profile because it's HQ, and I guess it's all part of the story about Nokia being doomed, as Fraser might say. But really this is just a fairly typical business process, which if it wasn't, you know, any other company other than Nokia, no one would bat an eyelid. So it's not really a big deal at all.
Okay. Moving on again, I want to rattle through these new stories. Nokia Suite has got, and I quote David, Windows 8 support, which I'll come to in a moment. It's also got Office 2013 support, which I guess is more evident that you can now sync between, for example, presumably Outlook 2013 and your PIM data on your phone locally, if you should wish to do so. I should mention this is for the beta track of Nokia Suite. If you're on the release version, either the official version via the Nokia.com website, then you'll get the next stable version, which we guess will be a few weeks or months away. If you've been keeping track with the betalabs.nokia.com beta track, then you'll be getting this stream of updates with extra support, including things like obviously synchronizing with the SkyDrive and putting your data up into the cloud and the Microsoft cloud. David, so he says Nokia Suite version 3.7.12.0 has support for Microsoft Windows 8. Have you any idea what that actually means in practice?
Nothing definite. I installed the update this morning because for any listeners who don't know, I am using Windows 8 full-time and have been for quite a while now. I was looking forward to seeing it launching in a Metro-style app, or at least a full-screen app in akin to what Google have done with Chrome. Even though Chrome still looks very much like the desktop version, it launches full screen and plays with the Windows 8 Snap functionality, etc. Nokia Suite does not do that. It launches in the desktop interface, just as every other version has. The only thing that I would assume Nokia have done is update the APIs that are being used in anticipation of like certain other APIs being depreciated. And there may also be some hooks built into it to support future Metro interface. We shouldn't say Metro, but we will. Metro interface. Interfaces.
So it's basically compatibility more than optimization.
I would say so. And it definitely not updating to the modern UI. But the other feature was, as you mentioned, is so that we can sync PIM data with Office 2013, which people can grab for free because Office 2013 is still in a beta preview at the moment. So you can go and grab it and see what you think.
I only bought Office 2010 about 2 weeks ago, so it's rather galling. I guess I should have kept more up to date with the Microsoft use. Moving on again, Gravity's non-beta track. Again, we've got this idea, guys, of a stable release track being updated every few months and then a beta track being updated every few weeks. But I think it's a great idea so that people can really choose how risky they want to be and how up to date. In this case, Gravity's previous stable build, I think, was back 15th of June. And since then, there have been something like 6 or 7 betas run by Yano Olisu, with some really nice, sexy new previews, some pretty major network and bugs fixed under the hood as well, and some UI improvements. I've been recommending in the various stories and all about symbian.com, people stay on track with the different the beta versions. But now anyone who's actually bought it through the Nokia store, they've got the stable track. They're now being offered the update to version 2.75, build 7129, with explicitly support for cover images, extra previews, and the network and UI improvements, and, quote, many, many bugs, and also, quote, sorry for the delay, guys. I guess Yanoli is hoping to put out stable releases more often in the future. I still reckon Gravity is the killer app on Symbian. I know there are some other very nice ones, but Gravity is the one that everyone keeps coming back to, and basically it's the core of any Symbian phone I own. Any seconders out there?
Yes, I'm always happy to give a compliment to Gravity. It's one of the apps I always install on my Symbian devices, so it's good to see updates continuing to flow.
Okay. David?
Yeah, and I would say the same. It's always going to be the first app that I reach for. I mean, ostensibly, it's a social networking application, but part of that is communicating with other people and staying in touch with the world. So Gravity lets you keep in touch with people, stay on top of the news, stay on top of your social networks, share photos, share thoughts. It goes, and also news, read Google Reader. It goes so much beyond being a Twitter client. I think we used to jokingly say about Nokia should release a Gravity phone, and I think that would still be a good idea.
Yeah, my favorite feature in Gravity, and I know some other Twitter clients and social clients are now implementing it, is not just inline photos, because that actually slows things down while it loads every image. But in Gravity's case, it knows about so many different sorts of media sharing sites that there's actually, if you use the context sensitive menu on any item in Gravity, there's nearly always a preview option, and that just loads it nice and simply without having to spawn out to a web browser or a separate image viewer. So just beautifully done. One final item. Nokia has won a Wi-Fi patent dispute with Research in Motion. I'm not sure, Rafe, whether you've been following this. Is it liable to be very lucrative for Nokia in the upcoming year?
I'm not sure necessarily how lucrative it'll be, but it's just part of the Nokia strategy of trying to make the most of its IP portfolio. The kind of the details of what's happened here is RIM and Nokia signed an agreement over Wi-Fi patents a while back, and Nokia said that RIM wasn't sticking to the letter of the law. There were some devices that weren't covered by it that it wasn't paying the kind of the license fees for the court agreed, and so kind of Nokia won in that sense. I suspect this will get settled in the sense that Rim will pay Nokia some more money. I don't think it will necessarily be a massive amount, but it's just kind of underlining really the strength of the Nokia patent portfolio. You know, people talk about it in kind of an abstract term, but it is actually a significant revenue generator for Nokia.
Yeah. Okay. We're kind of out of time, guys. Just a plug out there for my various comparisons between the Nokia 808 and N8 versus the new Lumia 920 on the Windows Phone platform. I know the 920 is Windows Phone and a different OS, and this is all about Symbian Insight podcast, but the comparison's been fairly interesting, seeing what Nokia is doing, I would say, with their PureView technology and labs and algorithms and so forth. Most recently, I was testing the Lumia 920's video capture versus the 808's video capture. And I have to say the 920 was pretty impressive. The optical image stabilization does show that that is one very, very valid way forward for Nokia video capture on smartphones. But I have to say that overall the 808, even in video mode, is still top of the heap. But even though it hasn't got the OIS, I mean, I was testing around and about the ability to zoom in. Maybe Ray can comment, he's got an 808. To zoom in losslessly and to completely dynamically, mid-clip, just reframe, resume your subject. It turns it effectively almost into a proper camcorder, and in some cases it will actually outperform a camcorder because it's got better audio captures. So although the 920 is good and probably the best of the current non-Symbian smartphones, I still reckon the 808 takes the biscuit here.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you, Steve. I'd also highlight the audio. They both got the high amplitude microphones, kind of high quality microphones, but the 920 only records in mono, where the 808 records in stereo. So, you know, that can make a difference when you're playing back. Yeah, zooming is obviously a big one. And if you're using that, clearly the 808 is superior. I will say though, that of course, shake when you're in zoom mode is a big problem. Unless you've got it on a tripod, it can be really problematic to keep the picture still. And when you watch it back, particularly on a big screen, it can it can make you feel a bit sick. So I would say, it's what I kind of said about the still capture. You know, the 808 is, you know, still the ultimate device in terms of the captured quality. But I think in some ways the 920 is a more usable product for the average user because this optical image stabilization really smooths out the videos and makes them much more watchable, particularly when you're watching them off the smartphone. Because your camera shake, you don't notice it too much on a small screen, but as soon as you start watching it on a TV, it becomes really noticeable. And that's where OIS really comes in. I think there's kind of room for improvement on the 920. You know, they don't seem to be doing the smart intelligent zoom as they've done on some of the other devices, which I think is a shame because given the sensor size, there should be some room to do that, even if it's not, you know, for the kind of the full range of the zoom. So, I think you're right, Steve. You know, you can argue quite clearly that the 808 is better, but I wouldn't give it that much of a lead over the 920 for the kind of the average consumer. And I'd actually say OIS probably makes the difference enough that for many people they're going to prefer that video and they're not going to notice the quality difference with the caveat of zooming, which I'd absolutely accept. And if you're a kind of a pro, you know, yes, the 808 in terms of, you know, smartphones, it's still the best for video capture, especially once you start doing the lighting properly, put it on a tripod and all that kind of thing. But that's a somewhat artificial judgment in a way, just as in the same way, you know, saying the 808 is the best camera phone, it's perfectly true, but that's not the only reason people are going to buy the phone. You know, it's taking stuff off the device, you know, other aspects of the device, the overall design and all of that. So it's always a kind of tricky to come to the conclusion. As much as I want to kind of defend the 808 as the ultimate device, you know, if someone comes to me and says the camera is the only thing that matters, go ahead, buy the 808 and you'll be very happy. But I think that kind of consumer is pretty rare.
Yeah. I come back listening to the list of pros and cons there, Rafe, to my idea that there must be some sort of combination of the two PureView phases. Something like a 21 megapixel sensor that's smaller, that's more agile, that can be mounted on servos along with the PureView phase 2 to give it the optical image stabilization. And then we really will have some degree of lossless zoom, some degree of optical image stabilization, and make it a backlit sensor as well, a backside illuminated sensor as well. And basically the best of all worlds in a device and a module that's not too thick. I think it can be done. I think Nokia are doing it, and I think we'll see it sometime in 2013.
Yeah, well, whenever we see it, we can guarantee something will happen because there's always progress. And if you look at the camera module size from something like, I don't know, the N90 to what it is equivalent today, you'll have noticed it's really shrunk down. And of course, there's a limit because of the actual physical size of the sensor in some cases. But I do agree there's actually scope to shrink down the 808's module size a little bit. And then, of course, there's software tricks. And as you say, maybe a happy ground between the two. But I have no doubt whatsoever that we'll see those kind of two phases of PureView combined together in some way in a future device. I mean, part of the reason it hasn't happened yet is Windows Phone 8 still isn't as capable as Symbian in supporting some of the more advanced imaging aspects. That is changing, and I suspect we'll see more of that in, you know, future versions of the platform. So yes, maybe this time next year, maybe 2014. It's always hard to put an exact thing on this. And of course, the other thing is, you know, the 808 is kind of somewhat unique in that it's, you know, more of a pure imaging device, much as the same way as something like the N82 was, or maybe the N86 as well. And it's harder to justify those, you know, because of course the generic devices sell in bigger numbers, and presumably the margins can be more attractive as well. Nokia has always sort of pushed about and done kind of aged devices as well. But given its current state, it's probably no surprise that it kind of concentrates on the generic device. But let me stick my neck out and say there will be a camera-centric device before too long.
Yeah, just looking at the thickness of my Nokia N8 in front of me, which is significantly slimmer than the 808's camera module, and yet the N8 still takes fabulous photos and fabulous video. And to put something of the same camera module size as the N8, and sensor size, optics and so forth, in something like the 920 with the OIS, I think would just be perfect. But we must cut this short, Rafe. We're running way long again. It's been wonderful having you both on. Thank you very much to David Gilson.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you to everyone who's listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
And thank you to Rafe Blanford.
Yes, everybody, thanks for listening. Check the website, allaboutsymbian.com, and if you can bear it, go and check out allaboutwindowsphone.com, because we're writing lots of stuff there too.
All right, catch you next time, guys. Bye.